Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Tim, Michael, Mo, and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour and their website analyticshour.io. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. This is episode 131. It is our last episode of 2019. It is our fifth completed year doing the podcast, which, incidentally, Tim Wilson, you've been a part of all but one of those. Well, I've been a part of all of them, but one of them you were not on. We'll talk about that more later. Can you believe the passage of time? Is it credible to you, Tim Wilson?
I actually was surprised when I realized this was 5 years. I'm not sure how that happened, but I was like, really?
I'm not sure how we got to 131 when we do 26 episodes a year. And I haven't gone back and tried to figure that out, but it should be 130. Mo, how do you explain this discrepancy?
With math.
I take no responsibility because I haven't been around for 5 years.
Bi-weekly. It's not.
It's bi-weekly. Yeah, it's just so funny because it worked out. I was trying to do the math and I was like, wait, it's one different.
Didn't you work in retail long enough to realize that approximately 2 weeks a month?
Oh, man. I'm just saying I'm not going to cover for your mistakes.
I mean, Michael worked in retail and he should be able to figure this out.
Yeah, that's right. But we don't follow the 3-4-3 calendar or whatever, or the 4-5-4 calendar or whatever it is. I even forgot. I'm either doing like weird haiku type stuff or retail calendars. Anyways, all right. And also joining us for the year in review episode, Josh Crowhurst, my fellow multi-touch moment partner in crime, and also our show producer. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, thanks, Michael.
Yeah. So this show, and I'll just do this again for everybody listening, we do 25 for you and one for us, and we spend the last show kind of reflecting on the year that's passed. This is sort of not new content. It's all stuff you probably could have heard before, but we've got deep thoughts. We cover a lot of tricky issues. We make charts and graphs about the performance of the podcast and the areas that are important to us. And we think back on all the guests and topics we've covered in the previous year. And then we look forward to what is happening in digital analytics, this industry that we love. So who wants to kick us off? We're going to go with reflecting on our industry for 500. Okay, well, don't all jump in.
Tim, you're allowed to talk about women in analytics. Just because I'm the woman doesn't mean I need to raise it. We need men to like...
Yeah, Tim.
Oh my God. I try so hard to not jump in all the time. And when I don't...
Tim, listen, Tim, this is... So maybe this is a topic where we can get into some of Tim's issues because...
Reflections on Tim?
Yeah, Tim. Well, I know how much you love to reflect on personal matters, Tim. No.
If we could talk about how I've grown my emotional intelligence over the course of the last 12 months.
Absolutely. I would say you're like top four in the podcast in terms of emotional intelligence. So. Yeah. All right. But let's do talk about women in analytics because I think as an industry, there are some really cool things to talk about in terms of women in analytics. And I think probably my most proudest moment of 2019 was sitting in my car, listening to the International Women's Day podcast episode that Mo, you hosted, and just like furiously agreeing and making mental notes and writing stuff down. And it just spurred so many amazing things of like, oh my gosh, this is so good. But actually, Tim, you're involved with some other stuff in this area too. So I don't want to steal all of your thunder. But
well, I thought you were going to say you were furiously scribbling down notes because you needed to explain to Mo what she could have done better, and what was so great about the episode.
Absolutely nothing. So Aubrey Blanche And Allison, my Forsats. Friend from Fairy Godboss, Forsats, yeah, did such an amazing job. And anyways, I felt like we had done something right in that episode, and I loved being associated with it, I guess is what I'd say.
I think this the topic is it's tricky because I think it is hard to look at 2019 and not see bright spots and see progress and see a lot of things that are really positive. But then with that, with this topic, like we have to be so careful to not say, and we're there, because we're clearly not at all there. I'm not saying that you're saying we're there. I'm just saying that's where it is tough. I always find it's uncomfortable to celebrate wins, but always having the caveat of saying, but that doesn't mean sit back, pat ourselves on the back and rest on our laurels. Not about that episode, yeah. Just progress in many areas. I think there, I would say a big thing. I think there are more men who the light bulb is finally coming on and they're more aware. And I don't think that's because the light bulb necessarily went on for me this year. It just seems like the conversations that I see, there are many, many more men who are starting to kind of get it. At the same time, this was one of those like, that's awesome and infuriating. There was a post on LinkedIn a couple of months ago where the organizer of Shop Talk, if I recall correctly, they went and they had speakers lined up and then they decided they were going to do 100% women speakers. And one, she said this was the first time a conference had done that. Well, hat tip to Jim Stern. He did it a couple of years ago with eMetrics. Maybe a little bit of a fumble. It looked like they actually had speakers lined up and they went to the men and said, you know what? Can you find someone else in your organization who's a female to speak? Putting that aside, that was kind of a, yeah, let's try that more. Let's try more conferences where you say, you know, we're going to have all women speakers. The Women in Analytics Conference in Columbus does that, open to all. All the speakers are female. The comments on that LinkedIn post are the way to get that dose of reality, because you have people saying, well, when are we going to have the all men speakers? When are we just want to have the best speakers? Like, and it was probably a mix of 60 to 40
at any other conference.
Yeah. I mean, it was, there were more, frankly, white dudes weighing in saying, well, what about that's like having an all Aryan speakers conference, or just saying things that were ridiculously moronic. So it's like, hey, this is great. Now let me read the feel good comments, feel good comment. Clueless asshole, you know, not good comment. So,
but to be honest, like that show for International Women's Day was one of my career highlights. Like it was completely incredible. And a lot of thought went into it because I didn't want it to be a show just about women talking about, I don't know, quote unquote, women's issues. But, you know, Allison and Aubrey are just such incredible people in the diversity space. But one of the things that did get me a little bit down is that when I went to look at the numbers of downloads for that show compared to the rest of the year, it definitely wasn't up there. Like it was a kind of a little bit not great performer. And that made me pretty sad.
Which is why we talk about it on this episode too, so that people can go back and catch the fuck up.
But one of the things I do want to talk about is the Women in Analytics Conference that Facebook sponsored. And number one, I desperately want to get invited because it's invite only. And I know my sister and Rachel went last year and we got some amazing speakers out of that conference. Like,
you mean guests? We got amazing guests for the show.
Amazing guests. Yeah. So like I got in touch with Mariam via that conference because so many people saw her speak and just said she was ridiculously amazing. And so I guess it just goes to show is like you can have really good quality female speakers. I just think you have to work really hard and like really use your network to make sure that you source great speakers.
No, I mean, the podcast certainly shows like we got some amazing guests this year. Emily Elster, Nancy Duarte, freaking awesome. And I mean, a lot of other people too. I just picking like really famous people.
But for those listening, Tim did some analysis on our guest mix. So this year, 44% of our guests were female, 37% were male, and 19% of the shows didn't have any guests, which the guys don't know this, but that was actually a personal goal for me, is that one of the years I really wanted us to have more female guests than male, and I didn't even know that we'd done it until, yeah, Tim put the numbers, and I was like, yeah.
Until I saw this perfectly formatted stacked bar chart that Tim pulled together. So quintessential, Tim. So quintessential.
Well, and that's, there was also a, I can't remember, Michelle Mo's, your sister, had the, I can't remember the name of the, there's one of those accounts that like does the reversing of positing what if this thing that is said about women is actually said about men. And there was a thread about all dude podcasts, and the thread was pretty funny, you know.
It's called Man Who Has It All on Facebook.
Yes.
I just like, I hate getting trapped in all these things sometimes, because like we've been doing a podcast for a long time, and apparently podcasts are now like what everybody does, like blogs back in 2007. So yeah, we've been here a while, folks.
But we started as all dudes droning on.
Well, so. Yes.
but I think that it does skew male. I think blogs skewed male. There are, and I listened to some, there are some very deliberate pushback against those when it comes to sort of the conversational industry type podcasts. I think we're super fortunate to have Mo having now joined the podcast a while back in the fairly distant past at this point, to have some degree of balance, but at the same time, we're perpetually still skewing to the dude, even our no guest shows.
And also all white.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually think for me, again, not that we've solved the issue of gender diversity or balancing in our industry by the slightest, certainly some positive things. But honestly, I think for me, that is big on my mind. There is not enough ethnic diversity within the analytics industry generally from what I see. And again, I see a part, I don't see all. So it's improving. But I think that's the thing, is like all of us need to sort of have a sense of, in the back of our heads, where's the current state? And then how can we push that forward just a little bit? So this is a big deal to me, because of what I realized when I was leading a practice at Search Discovery. I realized that I wasn't the best person to be able to inspire people to do analytics well for everyone. I just couldn't. And so then it became way more important to me to find people of all different kinds. And that's why the Balanced Teams episodes really hit home with me, is because it finally was like, wow, someone's actually doing the work that I realized needed to be done, which is there needs to be different perspectives so that other people can hear what's so exciting about being involved with this industry. And we need to keep breaking down those barriers and all the other things that go with, you know, like learning about all this stuff. But I'm awesome and I get through to some people, but a lot of those people look exactly like me and they think what I think and they watch Rick and Morty or YouTube videos that are funny or whatever. But I don't have a window into, just the other night, somebody tweeted something about how people who buy expensive tennis shoes should pay a higher tax bracket. And I was just like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Huh? How dare you take your values that you don't understand other people's values or culture and make some judgment on it? That doesn't make any sense to me. That's what we have to kind of like start pulling away. But that's why people, when I talk, some people can't hear me. Like, I'm just not going to get through. So
did you say something?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's the thing, is like everybody needs role models like them.
Yeah, exactly. They need to see somebody like them. I think that's in the US why Barack Obama is such a big deal as a president for 8 years, not just because he was African American, but because he then showed so many people who say, hey, he looks like I do. And that's important. That matters. Mm-hmm. Anyways, whew. Now can we talk about GDPR? I'm kidding. That's a joke.
I have no desire. I'm like GDPR'd out.
It's been the first full year under the heavy boot of GDPR, if we will, right?
But it's broadened.
Do you think we understand still what the enforcement is like? Because no. I feel like that was the thing where it was like, wait till it's in place and then we'll know what the enforcement looks like. I Still kind of don't know.
No, there's just been a few wishy-washy things and nothing. I feel like we're still kind of in the mist.
But I feel like the converse is an industry. It was the spark that now, because even if people don't fully understand GDPR or CCPA, the discussion around privacy, and partly that is, I think, also driven by browser, you know, with ITP and ETP and those sorts of things, that the just awareness of, hey, you know, there's a lot of this stuff's been chugging along with cookies and tracking people kind of very loosey-goosey, kind of potentially shady activity, depending on who's viewing it. So to me, 2019 was a progression. We don't have the answer, but there are a lot more people kind of grappling with the topic.
Yeah, I think people definitely started giving more attention to the concept of governance. And it made me realize something actually around the idea of governance generally, which is governance only occurs under two sets of criteria. One is externality of like regulation and those kinds of things, like you're forced to. The second is value. If you're actually getting value out, then governance emerges naturally to protect that value and grow it. But that's the only ways I think people really spend any time on actual governance.
And well, wait, so you just, we went from privacy to, do you just equate privacy with governance?
No. But GDPR is, it requires governance to make that happen.
Okay. That's what. Gotcha. Okay.
That's fair.
So In other words, you need to set up processes and governance structures. And before there was no like, well, we got something, we don't have much. But I think it sort of opens the door to all the other things you need to do from a governance perspective. And people are like, well, you know what? I should probably just make sure my data is actually in good shape too. And since I have to go through it anyways, make sure I'm not collecting the wrong kind of data or whatever. So that's what I mean. It's all in that governance bucket to me. Like,
and I guess it's interesting because it's like they overlap as a Venn diagram, but there's kind of the ethical, I think of when we had Finn Lattimore on and talked about the ethics of AI, there's kind of the ethics of data collection and data usage. And that's sort of the corporate, where do we culturally or ethically draw our line? That has to be really decided first. And then the governance processes have to support it. It jarred me a little bit when you went straight to governance, because that's like, that's the regulatory requirements that track it. But then there's the piece that comes in that says, where do we fit from how we philosophically want to think about the data that we're collecting and using?
Yeah. Well, I've been thinking a lot about that too, actually. Like, because being in the industry for a long time, you know, before there was nothing, right? So it was just a wild, wild west. We were all trying to do stuff, be the best we could be. And I always sort of had this mentality of like, well, my attitude towards people's data is very pure. I don't personally ever intend to do anything terrible or advertise in negative ways or use data in negative ways. And so therefore, as an actor, I'm a good actor.
But that's back to projecting your values onto what?
No, I know. And that's what I'm saying is I'm learning it's not good enough. That's just not good enough anymore to have that mentality, because the day I leave, some asshole will come in and start misusing the data.
But it's also misuse of data is not just about intentionally misusing it. It's also about really good intention people making mistakes.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I think that's what I was trying. I mean, I think you're on this. We're on the same page, Mo.
Yeah. But it's not binary. I guess that's the other. You could go to 10 people and say, we're going to use this piece of data about you in this way. And one person would say, I hate it. One says, that's fine. And 8 other people would say, well, makes me a little uncomfortable. And it's messy.
Right. But I know best. So that's the thing. So it's okay.
So I think you guys have kind of covered the existential threats sort of to the way we've always done things. We've covered kind of ITP and cookie handling in a previous episode. And kind of the discussions around increasing regulation and the ethical side of that. I guess just like one observation I've had kind of working in the Hong Kong market or APAC more generally is seeing more and more companies taking digital analytics functions in-house. And I think it's coming from, in this region, like an ever-expanding focus on data and analytics as kind of like a critical function of their business. And it's becoming less and less something that people want to totally entrust to external partners. So like, I guess I'm curious, like, are you guys seeing the same thing where you're at? Sometimes, you know, the market I'm in can be a little bit behind and always sort of playing a bit of catch up to, you know, particularly to the United States and to Europe. So I'm wondering.
See, I think the opposite. I think our region is often ahead of the game. And I mean, yeah, in Australia, it's definitely the case where, like, we now here at Canva, we have 27 people in the data function between data science, data analytics, and data engineering. And I think more and more people do want to take it in-house because data, very quickly, people are realizing that's your IP. Mm-hmm. Like, that is something that you need to have ownership of and you need to understand and you need to be looking after the quality. And I'm even seeing a lot of data as a product. Like, people are starting to want to build their own data products because for whatever reason, what's in market isn't working. And that's more and more coming in-house. And it's something I still haven't wrapped all my thoughts around, but I definitely think the analytics function, especially, yeah, like client side, it should be in-house.
Totally.
I mean, you have the business context.
So, but let's tease that apart. It should be in-house. True. A lot of companies would like it to be in-house. I'm not seeing it strongly one way or the other. The ability to bring it in-house, I feel like our industry, the reason that agencies and consultancies have been doing well is because finding that talent, you know, bringing somebody in-house, it's probably, at least in the States, in a lot of cases, going to cost companies more than they're comfortable paying. They're maybe able to pay more for a contractor or a consultancy because it's under that consulting contractor model than when they say, oh, for an FTE, I'm either going to get, I mean, I think they hire plenty who aren't that great. I mean, there's still a supply and demand gap. So there's, I don't know if you guys see that at all.
I think they're hiring shit people.
Yeah. if that's your option, I'd like it to be in-house, right, but I can't afford or stomach the cost or find the talent. What do you do?
You go international and then you find a way to bring them to you. Like, if you don't have enough talent in your market, go to other markets. Oh. I mean, there's like amazing, amazing talent in Eastern Europe, throughout Asia, Australia. Like, I don't know. I just think, and I've had this discussion before with other people in the US that are like, Mo, it's not that easy to get someone a visa.
It's
like,
pretty difficult. Be real. Yeah.
But to be honest, that's how the Australian market is doing this. Like, we don't have enough good talent in Australia. We're moving people here.
But that's, my understanding is Australia is, it is much, much easier to actually, I mean, yeah, the States particularly, well, we're fucked up on many, many fronts, but yeah, crossing international boundaries is, you're basically pointing out that that's hurting industry and that picking up that talent is really tough.
Oh, geez. We just landed on the pro H-1B side of the argument. Mm. That's disappointing. Well, only for the negative backdrop to it. Anyways, I think from my perspective, Josh, on this, I think you're right about this. And actually, I'm making a pretty big personal bet that that's the case because I just started my own company to basically help companies build their analytics organizations up to be able to do this kind of work. So I'm a consultant, but I'm a consultant who helps companies in-house their analytics better. So yeah. It's sufficiently complex enough that a lot of companies aren't getting what they need from their in-house talent. So they still need help kind of building that up. But I think the time is right for it. Or people are starting to value it more than just what the traditional advertising agency was providing to them over the years of sort of like canned reports with no real kind of understanding of the context of the business and those kinds of things.
Right.
And I think to your point, Mo, of how things are proceeding in Australia, I think that's really heartening to hear about a place where people are really giving it that kind of focus, because that's really what is demanded, right, to make this work effectively.
It's hard though. Like, I still meet people at, we're now Data Analytics Wednesday, and they're kind of like trying to either transition into data or they're finishing uni, and they'll come up to me and they'll be like, hey Mo, I really want to get in the industry. What should I do? You know, I've been playing around with Tableau and Data Studio. I'm like, that's really cool. Learn SQL. No one will hire you in the Australian market if you don't have SQL. Mm. Like, end of discussion. You can have all the data viz stuff you want, but to be honest, like, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, you can pick that stuff up on the job. But like, if you don't have SQL on your resume, like, and I don't know if the States is the same, but you won't get a job here.
Oh, who was it who came out with this fucking data translator thing?
McKinsey.
Was it McKinsey?
Yeah, I think so.
And I, boy, that's right up there with citizen data scientist for me. And I know a lady who, she just changed jobs and she was like, I'm looking for a new job and I'm going to be like this data translator person. Cause you know, I can do this and that. And I'm thinking, I mean, she got a new job. Good for her. But I think that is a lot of people who are saying, wow, that seems hard. I don't know if I want to actually invest that much or if I'm that jazzed about SQL and then Python or R and getting technical. And I agree with you, Mo. I think it's got a longer legs. It's like saying that Excel is going to die. Like, I mean, everybody says Excel is not going anywhere. Yeah. It will still be around. But if you actually want to be doing analytics, you're going to really be in a tiny little niche if you're just doing data visualization.
There is a path, though. There is a path to not having to know SQL, and it's to have already been in the industry for 15 years, synthesize that information, and then start your own consultancy.
But I think the problem is, and I've had this in workplaces, the people that don't need SQL become dependent on someone else to pull data for them.
Yes, that's right.
And then you have this, like pretty much every company, and I know I'm talking very generically about client side, data is stored in databases. That's mm-hmm. where it lives. And if you want to find a way to pull that, and like, I mean, I've had finance teams who are like, oh, we want to do all this analysis. We need all of these metrics. And someone in the data team has to write SQL to pull the data for them. And you're like, this is ridiculous. Like, you need to learn SQL. If you want to do analysis, you need to pull your own data.
Yes.
But I think it's one of the things that I was kind of reflecting on this was I actually kind of feel like it's getting easier for people to find the resources that allow them to gain those skills. So, and maybe that's just because of kind of over the past couple of years, I've become more involved in getting into the community. So whether that's through the Measure Slack or this podcast and others like it and finding resources online, lots of amazing courses, lots of amazing resources for learning SQL. You don't have to necessarily pay for that anymore and you can kind of do it on your own. So I do agree it's totally necessary. I just feel like it's easier to pick that up than it was even, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when I was first getting into this industry.
But it's funny, I'm even getting to the stage with marketers and product managers. Like, I know some companies here, they won't hire you as a marketer or product manager if you don't know SQL now.
Wow.
And all my friends who are in the industry who are like, what's the one thing I should learn? And I'm like, SQL.
I'll counter it a little bit. I mean, I'm obviously on that same path. And I have, as a SQL dabbler, well over a decade ago, who then had no need to use it. And I've kind of gotten back into it a little bit. But the reality is working with a number of very large companies doing, I think, what would be considered real work, certainly seeing what is real work being done by their in-house talent, by our staff, by agencies, there are still, if you were living purely in the digital world of, call it digital marketing and digital analytics, not everything lines up in a SQL database. Like the number of databases that I even have access to is vanishingly small. Now I'm outside and I've got a range of responsibilities, but even the people who are in-house and looking at the scope of what their mandate is, which is reasonably legitimate, and yes, they could always be doing more, there aren't necessarily databases that they are hooking directly into.
2024, we're going to revisit this topic, and I am totally betting that things have moved even more in the direction.
I'm not the one defending. I'm just saying, let's not make it like I hate absolutes on anything. Like literally no absolute is ever right.
I'm not saying an absolute. I'm saying when people ask what skills they should learn, that is the skill they should learn.
Could you stop and acknowledge my joke first?
Only a kiss deals in absolutes. Sorry. Star Wars joke.
I do have one reflective topic,
okay,
which I've kept as a surprise reflective topic. Uh-oh. Because I think this is going to get even more pushback.
I'm on the same page with you SQL-wise, just FYI.
Thanks, Elves.
So you know. I was joking about me not knowing SQL, but if you're coming into the industry right now, you need to learn SQL. And the reason Tim and I can get away with not knowing it is because we've been around for so long. There's other ways we can add value.
Yeah, totally.
I feel like I know it better than Michael.
I also have done SQL and can learn it again. So fuck you, Tim. I could totally do SQL anytime I wanted to at an appropriate level after a little bit of Googling and some Stack Exchange. Okay, back to you, Mo, on your surprise reflection.
Okay, so the war was waged and, drumroll please.
I don't know what we're drumrolling.
Python 1. Everyone I know who knows R is either learning Python or like pretty advanced in Python. In my team alone, like I'm the only person who's still just an R user. All the people that use R have gone to Python. Like I'm not saying that R doesn't have use and I still use it, but I think for the industry, there was a war in Python 1.
I don't think it was a battle, but okay.
Yeah, it's sort of like...
Why don't you think it was a battle?
You just said like, hey, peanut butter and chocolate had a war and peanut butter won. It's like...
Well, in that one, chocolate won.
Google Analytics and Adobe Analytics had a war and one of them won. I don't see it that way at all, but...
I like them both. I just don't see them really in that much of opposition to each other.
Mm.
Like, I don't...
Mm. I'm like really surprised by this.
I think personally, I would go Python because somehow it makes more sense to me, like the way the syntax works. R still confuses the crap out of me, but I've done some tutorials. I promised Simo I would learn some programming language, so I'll probably go the Python route, but that's just because Tim went R. So.
Well, and I mean, I can point to people who came up on Python, had no reason to switch from Python, started dabbling in R and said, oh, I see where I'd want to use this. I'm really intrigued by it. And on their own, as projects are coming up, are saying, I'm going to do this in R because I see the benefit there. And I still think Python has a ways to go when it comes to the visualization presentation. I think there are pockets of what R does. And then the fact is they can cross over pretty seamlessly between using both. You can embed Python in R and you can embed R in Python. So, you know, if I had my druthers, I would totally know both. But wow, if there's a package for in R that avoids me having to write API calls from scratch in Python because there's not, you know, a package there yet, then just right there, I want to pull data from X location. So I don't really see them in opposition.
I don't know. I think that the way that I'm seeing Python being used, and this is because I am seeing a lot of this, like people trying to build their own data product, or you're trying to build analytics back into your platform or like an ML model or all that sort of stuff. You can productionize Python better. And therefore I'm finding there's less and less uses for R in my everyday work. Like I still think it does an amazing job when you're like trying to do analysis and that sort of stuff. I just think that if I had my time over again, I would be learning SQL and Python.
I think it's a fair statement, and I'm not really authoritative enough to know that when it comes to operationalizing machine learning, that you do wind up saying that should be done in Python. But I think they both have massive install bases with massive breadth of use cases, and to... Again, make a declarative statement that one has, we're not talking OS2 and Windows here. So
But we'll finish with this, which is some validation for you, Mo, because the number one language on the developer survey that people wanted to learn was Python. That was the Stack Exchange survey. Doesn't make it right. It's still a why not both type situation, but definitely is growing.
Right. But keep in mind, Python still general purpose with once Pandas came on and continued development, tons of analytics capabilities. But you're comparing a general purpose programming language to one that was built for and by analytics and statisticians.
Right. Statisticians.
But to be honest, like that's one of the things that I've loved about watching how Python has evolved in companies is that all the full stack engineers are learning it too. And so suddenly when you build data product, it's not just about the analytics or data science people managing it. It's like the engineers want to be involved in it. And then you suddenly have this conduit between these two different areas of the business.
What's the front end for that data product? Yet another language, right?
Elixir or React or something like that.
Right. So from a building, and again, I'm saying this is not, it is not a win or loss.
Tim disagrees with you, but he's trying to be very careful not to.
No, I definitely disagree.
Okay.
But I'm not disagreeing by saying that R won. I guess I'm not. I'm saying it's a false premise.
Oh, okay. Good. I think there's a lot of room out there. So, Mo, would you ever ask a marketer to learn Python?
Not Python, but SQL.
SQL. Interesting. Okay. I wasn't sure how you fell on that. All right. Listen, there's so much reflecting we could do, and frankly, we have to keep going. Let's go to what episodes specifically this year. We've already talked about a couple, but I know each of us has got a couple in mind that we really stood out to us for some reason that we wanted to talk about with each other.
Mine was every episode that Josh edited.
That was a pretty good.
Yeah, let's start with Josh because he had to do all the listening.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Josh was like, I hated all of them.
No, it's great. I mean, yeah, I probably got the chance to like listen through them all, you know, between editing it and checking it afterwards, like two or three times on every episode. So I feel like I have a deep knowledge of like the last 15 episodes. But no, I really, probably the top one that stood out most to me was on working with image data with Ali Vanderveld. I just thought, I mean, the topic itself is really, really fascinating, but the way that she explained those concepts was incredibly engaging. And for something that's super complex, she made it quite approachable and kind of easy to digest. I mean, I know very little kind of about that space or that topic generally. And I came away from that episode feeling really, really inspired. And I was telling my colleagues like, oh, you guys have to wait like in a couple weeks. This great episode. You have to listen to it. Wow. But then if I can do a twofer, I think the other one, just in terms of probably the splash and the impact of it, was the ad fraud episode with Dr. Augustin Fu and just the kind of shocking scale of the issue. Yeah, just pretty jaw-dropping and got a lot of similar reactions with everyone that I shared it with.
Those are a great two to contrast, because to me, the Ali was something that it wasn't an area I knew really anything about, mm-hmm. and hadn't really factored in like how and where it could play. And then the fact that she just explained things brilliantly, like that's like a motivator for doing the podcast, is the opportunity to actually have a discussion with people like Ali on those topics.
Yeah.
The ad fraud, I feel like I knew it was an issue. I brought it up, but at the same time, I would happily stick my head in the sand for a month or 2 months or 3 months at a time. To have that just like hit us in the face, I don't think I quite realized how much he was out championing it.
It definitely made me do some different looks at some GA reports. Just to sort of be like, what? Is there anything? Okay, that looks normal. Like, what? What is this? Yeah. Anyways. What about you, Mo? What were some favorite episodes of yours?
Well, I get like six favorites this year because it was our best ever year.
That's technically exactly not correct, but let's just see where you go with this.
Okay, this year we were really lucky. We did have a few like quote unquote famous people. So the episode with Emily Oster about contradicting conventional wisdom with data, and of course the episode with Nancy Duarte on data stories, those two were like, mm-hmm. you know, people I never thought in my life I'd get to speak to, and was completely incredible. But then I just loved the episode with Mariam about what's in a job title, maybe the data shows. I talk about that all the time with our internal recruitment team. It constantly comes up in conversation. And like, I actually left feeling like I learned something really tangible about recruitment. And then of course, like, oh, how could the creating balance team with Aubrey and Allison not be just this amazing highlight for the fact that it was the first all-female show, but also like I was pretty nervous about hosting the show on my own because I think obviously you guys just have so much value. But to have those two incredible women just like bouncing off each other, it was almost amazing to just kind of be a spectator to that.
Well, I feel like we should call
out. Oh, and then the Ali episode. Sorry. And then the Ali episode about working with image data. I like that. Anyway, I can't choose.
I also wanted to mention, it made me think of episode 117, which is the What's in a Job Title with Mariam Jahanshahi. In Harvard, I think, just published a paper like 2 weeks ago where they did an experiment across 60,000 different job applicants to Uber to show how the words used change who applies for these jobs. Mm-hmm. So like there's academic research showing some of this stuff. Then like, I was like, wow, we were way out in front on this on our show. Welcome to the party, Harvard. Yeah, that's not really what I thought. But what I thought was like, that's awesome to see like more research going in. We'll put this in the show notes. I'll find the document again and we'll put it in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But it's just pretty cool to see like, you know, hey, this research is ongoing. Anyways, totally agree with you, Mo.
Well, to follow on that, I think there was, we asked, I remember after we'd finished recording and I'd asked if another company that I can't remember what it was a competitor of Merriam's, and they are, but there have been some of those kind of machine learning driven, trying to kind of extract the metadata. Like we are going to get to that natural language processing episode. It will be one of our favorite shows of 2020, even though we don't know exactly who we're going to talk to or how it's going to go, because it's been a little bit of a gap, but I think we didn't make it super clear. You started to say this earlier when we were talking about the International Women's Day episode, that like Mo, you alluded to it, like the idea was this was not going to be a show about women in analytics. It wasn't going to be, it just landed people where that essentially, I mean, it became diversity, so it was a little bit broader. That really wasn't the intention. And when you do it this year, the amazing guest you have lined up, you know, it probably won't be that. So yeah. This is tough. The farther we go down the list, these are,
I know.
I think one of the best ways that you champion women in analytics is not by women talking about women in analytics, but about women just talking about the amazing work that they're doing anyway.
Absolutely.
Like the Ali Vandervelts of the world, where you just are like, look at this amazing woman who's doing this really cool work, or Mariam, or Emily, like that. That's how you champion diversity, in my opinion.
Which this was before you joined, when it was for the period when it was just Michael and me, and we had Krista on an episode, and it was a woman talking about women in analytics, and we agonized. I mean, kind of with her, we're like, this is. It was, she had put out some thoughts and content that was really good on the topic. And we said, I think we even acknowledged at the beginning of the show that, yeah, this is inherently awkward to have this discussion. And I think, well, you know, this year is, we've had most of our discussions that have had women has just been a topic where the guest is a woman. But that one still stands out to me as definitely a top show, partly just because when you get people who have really passionate about whatever the topic is, and they articulate it really, really well, and it gets into a flowing conversation that actually circles back on itself and references back, because their thoughts are so well thought out and backed up by evidence. It was just, you couldn't walk away without saying, this is the most compelling argument. Like you could bring in a counterpoint view and it would get crushed because there's so much depth of thought there. And I'd say that's similar. Like Dr. Fu was kind of a similar laser focused on that topic of ad fraud in a similar thing. But I mean, I had a similar experience to Michael, and I got to listen to the recording of the Creating Balance teams live. And then I listened to it again when I was editing it, but that was my number one show. We have not brought up the ethics in AI. We referenced it a little bit earlier on this episode, but with Finn Lattimore. And I think that one actually, I think that is what helped me get from the good versus bad, this like binary view. She had so many points, and I've not that I haven't read, and even since then I've become more aware of that underneath ethics are like values, and people's values can be different. Their value systems can be different. Organizations have values, and many of those are not right or wrong. It's a spectrum, or it's a range. And yes, there are clearly nefarious and evil things, and there are clearly pure as the driven snow things, but there's a whole lot of stuff that is different things to different people. So that one was just, it bent my brain a bit.
Oh, I bet we'll come back to that topic.
Oh, I love talking about ethics in AI. We've actually covered it quite a bit at Data and Analytics and at Measure Camp in Sydney as well. And it's just a topic that I care so deeply about. And I get so excited talking to like-minded people about it, because I think there are a lot of consequences of the work that we do. And unless we, and no one's leading the charge, and unless we really have conversations about it, you know, people can unintentionally make some really shitty mistakes.
I worry that as human beings, and especially in the Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter culture that we're in, where things are sound bites and our ability to think deeply is getting diminished. And the ethics in AI, it is a broad and deep topic that requires an attention span that's longer than a 1 hour meeting. And I think that's, you know, privacy and ethics kind of overlap on that front. But I worry about the human race losing its ability to wrap our brains around complicated topics.
Mm. Well, the New York Times has been publishing those documents from the Chinese government about how they're using data and AI to basically oppress a people group in the Uyghurs. So I know by saying that, Josh, I'm putting you in harm's way. So sorry. But I mean, we're living on that frontier, right? Right now, like, there's stories going around about how in China, they're about to force you to use facial recognition to log onto your phone or to the internet generally. So we're headed down a track and it's got some craziness on it. Anyways, ethics and AI, super important stuff, because there's could be used for really great things. It could be used for really the most evil things we've ever seen as a human race, potentially. Okay, so let's get back to shows we liked. So, Tim,
I hit mine.
Any other?
No.
Okay, you hit yours? Yeah. Okay. Well, I saw like some of the ones that other people did. And so I was like, well, let me not double up on some of these because I certainly would count them. So I was like, well, what are some ones that just I super enjoyed it? I loved the content of it and the people we had on. And so two stood out to me out of all the many great episodes. So first was episode 109, which was the podcast measurement episode with Stacey Gores from NPR, and her team developed this rad remote audio data protocol. It's open source, so anybody who does a podcast can use it and set it up in their application. And it was just so cool because it sort of represented this nifty, cool frontier of analytics that, you know, really hasn't, I mean, we're still working off of basically downloads for the most part in the podcast space. So much work to be done. And so it's kind of, you know, neat. I like that one.
I'm a little ethically squeamish about that one because she did actually wind up sending my daughter like a little set of National Public Radio, like swag socks and stickers and stuff. And I felt like maybe I'd, you know, use the podcast for my own personal gain. But
so you were ethically challenged because you used your connections to get stuff from NPR. You could be a donor, Tim. Just donate some money. I think they do that thing where they ask you to donate.
No, that was kind of awesome. Almost made me, you know, get within 27 miles of being cool to my daughter.
And then the other show that really stood out to me was actually episode 122, which was the one we had with Astrid Illum dealing with disparate stakeholders. And I just, as I scrolled through and thinking about each episode, I was like, man, that one just stands out to me as like the depth and quality of some of the insights that she shared on that podcast, I think like span the years. Like, there's a book in there, is what I think. Mm.
And the fact that we were able to record with me somewhere in like remote Italy with almost no internet connection still completely baffles me. And
that's right. You were like climbing on the roof of the shed that was passing as the kitchen, looking out over the bucolic countryside of,
yeah, that was good fun.
This Astrid could be the session I'm most looking forward to at Super Week, because she's basically putting her futurist hat on and thinking about analytics. So that ought to blow our minds for anyone who makes it to Super Week.
Yeah, that is definitely a must see at Super Week. Register today. Okay. This is going to be a long ass episode, but we got to keep going. Don't want to shortchange the most important part, which is now we've talked about the industry. We've talked about the podcast. Now it's time to talk about us. What are we doing going forward as an industry, personally? What skills do you hope to learn next year? What do you think are some big things that are going to happen in 2020?
And for you, that means besides growing our LinkedIn group for the podcast and making it a
baby steps. Baby steps, Tim.
Is mine to be less of an asshole next year, to truly grow my emotional intelligence?
Goals have to be achievable, Tim.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Mo.
Are you talking about the LinkedIn group or my emotional intelligence?
You decide, Tim. It's best if you just figure that one out yourself.
So I've got one. My role here at Canva has actually been kind of weird in that out of the 12 people in data and analytics, everyone's super, super technical, does a lot of data engineering, building data products. And I've just been this weird person since I started where I'm like going around the business fixing problems, and a lot of them is fixing data problems. And 2020 for me is really going to be about building our data culture, which is super important. But one of the things that my coach has talked to me a lot about is like, but Mo, you took this job because you wanted to grow your technical skills. And I'm like, that is 100% true. And so what we're trying to do like each week is carve out some of my time to actually do deep technical work. And if maybe if I say it here, it like it will really force me to hold myself to account. But over the next year, I really want to learn Python. And I'm part of this really amazing technical team. Like everyone writes amazing code. There's really good QA practices. So I feel like I'm in the right place to do that. And my coach and I are really working on how I make sure I have enough time to do it. So yeah, 2020, the year of data culture and Python.
It's interesting, Mo. I completely support you in that, but I think
not technical support. I'm sure he could Google Stack Exchange, but
I support Mo as a person, Tim. Whatever she chooses to do, I support it. And sure, come to me with all your Python questions. I'm really good at asking them again in Measure Slack or Googling for answers. So no, but like one thing I say to lots of people, and I'm not saying it directly to you, but I'm going to say it to all the listeners and you can take something from it if you want. But I think there is sort of a thing we need to be careful of, which is don't be afraid to embrace being a generalist. There is a group of people who being a generalist and not necessarily a master of every deep technical thing, that is a very legitimate thing to do. And it's complementary to the analytics industry. And I only say this because like I'm not deeply technical either. And so I struggled with this for years. Like, should I be learning Python right now? Should I? And I always say to people, like, I'm as technical as I need to be. I'm never going to say, you do this for me. I'll roll up my sleeves and figure it out. But I know I'm not set up to be a developer. That's why I'm not a developer. I don't know what I am. I'm a digital strategist, analyst, whatever.
But I would say, though, that being a generalist is not about not – like for me, being a generalist means I don't have to be the best person at Python.
Yeah,
but if exactly. That's what my team is all programming in, I need to be good enough that I can coach people in my team or like understand the code they're writing and use and run the code they're writing, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what I would say to a lot of people who are kind of struggling with that gap is sort of like – keep working on your soft skills because maybe your job in the future should be managing all of those developers and leading that whole team, not doing the development work personally. And so like you just have to kind of give yourself the room. And again, if you love what you do, then keep doing it. If you want to learn Python, learn it. Like go do it, whatever you want. But I think sometimes in our industry, we get a little excited about people who know all the details. And not enough excitement around the people who know where all the details should go. And so it's crucial that, you know, all these things come together in a one unified whole to actually drive value. And so there's a lot of different people. This is actually sort of like, as I reflect on the future of analytics, I just feel like analytics is no longer one thing. It's now multiple disciplines. Lots and lots of different disciplines. And so you can make a whole career out of any one of those. It's kind of insane.
But I think setting a big goal to learn something tangible and new, that there's a lot of stuff that you learn that you weren't expecting to learn. Like my journey into R pretty fundamentally shifted my understanding of data. And it's where it is comfortable to be kind of an incremental. If there's not something tangible that you can kind of set as a something of a BHAG, then it is easy to say, well, I'll incrementally improve on that next thing next week. I'm going to keep doing. So I feel like there's value in setting.
It's crazy to me, Tim, that you took what I said and meant it as don't set goals or learn new things. Because I totally didn't say that. You should totally do the things you just said, and I totally agree with you. But actually, I don't think not learning things should be part of anybody's strategy.
Well, I'm just saying that learning something like Python or R or SQL or Tableau or Alteryx or Google AdWords that they have this nice thing in that they're tangible, and you can go from don't know it all to and bumbling around to feel reasonably comfortable with it. And therefore those are easier new things to learn than I'm going to get better at communication, or I'm going to get better at marketing strategy. If you're doing those, yeah, then you really have to work to say, okay, how, what is my plan that is going to force me to, yeah, you know, to do that.
Mm. Well, and I would say based on where you're at in your career, you want to build hard skills up into soft skills, right, over time. So that makes sense. Yeah, I've
given up on the soft skills. I have no aptitude for the soft skills.
I think you could do something with them.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
You have secret soft skills you don't like to talk about, Tim. It's why you're so lovable.
Oh, we are going to run way over on this.
Yeah, it's a long episode. All right, who else is looking forward to the future?
New job, Josh.
I'm starting a new job in January, moving from agency side into a startup. So I'm entirely terrified, but, you know, new, exciting, scary is good.
How's your SQL skills?
A little rusty. They didn't ask me about SQL, but I did talk a lot about R in my interview, actually. I'm like,
but I know his R skills are good because he helped me fix something this year.
Nice.
Yeah. Last time I wrote SQL was actually inside R. There's a package that lets you paste in SQL to run SQL queries in your data in R. So that was the last time I used SQL was actually inside an R script. So kind of to Tim's point.
It pisses me off because all the formatting's totally stuffed, though, which anyway, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't quite look right.
To be fair, if you're using dplyr in R doing data frame manipulation, you're using SQL concepts, basically.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's we won't get back into that.
But yeah, and then just in terms of stuff I'm super excited for, it's going to be my first Super Week this year. So I've heard so many good things, and I'm looking forward to being there and meeting some people face-to-face for the first time, such as you folks on this podcast.
Yeah, actually, it was Super Week where we all three, the rest of us, met the first time too, Mo, right? It met in person 2 years ago?
That's right.
All three of us together at the same.
Tim, we met at an eMetrics, I believe. Okay, so I am looking forward to next year too, because I have done something very foolish and quit my very nice job at Search Discovery and started my own company. And so I'm going through a little bit of a startup-y thing myself there. And so that's why I'm not going to focus too hard on the hard skills this year, Tim. Because I'm focused very hard on one hard skill, which is trying to make a business work. And it's fun. I'm having a really awesome time. And it's been pretty cool to sort of do both sides of this again, helping companies structure analytics to make it actually work for them. And, you know, we're early days yet, only a couple months into this, but I actually just sent my first invoice out today, the day we recorded. So that's a big step.
Not as big as getting it paid, but, you know.
Then getting paid for that is the next thing. Yeah. I know how it works, Tim. I know how it works. Or I know how I hope it works. Anyway. No, but it's pretty awesome, and it's been a fun experience. But 2020 is definitely going to be a very exciting adventure year for me for that reason. What about you, Tim? What's your development plan for 2020?
Yeah, I'm just not in a good spot right now to actually figure out what that is. So I think I'm going to have to take a hard pass on that. There are lots of things I want to pursue, and I have not figured out how to successfully pursue the right one.
I think I speak for Mo when I say, have you thought about SQL or Python?
I started pursuing SQL again and then got steamrolled by some client work and other life issues and thought, damn it, I have to pull the cord on that. Yeah, Python was it for a while. I just honestly don't know. I've got a whole lot of really interesting and exciting things going on, but I can't point to which ones are actually going to grow me professionally.
Yeah.
Hopefully the powers that be at Search Discovery don't listen this far into the episode and call me on it, because I'm going to have to make up some bullshit things in our quarterly system on that front.
ghost OKRs, as I like to call them.
I set them every quarter and then horrendously fail to achieve them. So
if they're aspirational, then that's as designed, right?
Let's not go down that path.
Okay. All right. Okay. We need to start to bring it back in. Let me just say that we've been doing this podcast for 5 years now, which is pretty incredible. And, you know, most folks don't know how the ins and outs of the podcast work, but for almost all of those years, Tim Wilson has personally seen to the editing and the creation of the show links and all this different stuff. And this year we brought on a producer in Josh who has, I think changed Tim's life, in a very positive fashion. And it's actually been like a pretty awesome guy to get to know this year. So I just want to take a minute and say, Josh, you don't probably know the impact you've had on this podcast and on our community, but we are so glad. I am so glad that you are part of our show. And geez, we should have done it 3 years ago, but maybe you wouldn't have been around. So
if all the latent aggression and tension you sense between, you know, the three of us, and you think, my God, what was this like before I was here? Well, it used to be just full on screaming matches.
Matt, did we ever yell at each other? Not.
I think Josh has witnessed the only close to yelling that's happened.
Oh yeah. Oh,
okay. But that wasn't during a recording.
Right. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Exactly. This is the business side.
I agree. Josh has been. It has been awesome to have. And that's where, I mean, hopefully we've gotten feedback that people have enjoyed like the multi-touch moments. And that's not just because Josh is, you're part of them, but that has actually partly been because it's freed up capacity for us to even like think about and, you know, do those sorts of things. So
think of dumb stuff to say.
There are things that are happening that aren't just behind the scenes operational improvements, although those are keeping us sane.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks for the shout out, you guys. Like, I'm honestly having a great time helping put the show together. And it's been great to kind of get to know you guys. So
plus it makes all the news going on in Hong Kong. Like, you joined just in time for it to be instead of a passing news story. It's like, okay, Josh, are you still far enough away from the.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys have live updates on the situation on the ground in Hong Kong.
So I will, as kind of as my sort of big reflection, and I sort of feel like, I mean, this is a somewhat repetitive topic because this is the fifth year in review episode we've done. No, things have shifted. I feel like every year when I kind of look back on the year of the podcast, I've got like a series of those really cool interactions with listeners, people that I knew before, people that I didn't know before, people who have said that they got something really useful out of the show, just people I've gotten to know. And that was kind of the excuse because it seems like we're reasonably approachable. So getting to go and represent, being at conferences or even just being in the Measure Slack and kind of establishing those connections, like it is very heartwarming and rewarding to feel like I'm part of a community that actually cares and is growing and is trying to support each other, and feeling like we're contributing to that is pretty cool. And working with Mo and Josh on the podcast has been awesome.
And not helps.
I think that was implied.
Oh, okay. That's the joke.
I was just seeing if he was paying attention. And you're great too.
This is why I'm usually not on the mic.
While to understand Tim's humor, I think.
Although it's going to be weird. Like 2019 was, I think, the only full year that we were, I guess most of 20, almost all of 20, well, maybe all of 2018. We were coworkers for 2 years. So we were only podcast collaborators for 2 years, coworkers and podcast collaborators. So I'm not doing my math well. 3 years not as coworkers, two as coworkers, and we're going to go back to not being coworkers. And that's going to be interesting.
A huge load off, for sure. Yeah.
I can't. And well, for me, I've already done my prediction. In 5 years' time, 2024, the whole world is going to know SQL, and I'm going to remind you all of it in our year in review episode because they're my favorite.
So, could I be a citizen SQL person Is that a thing?
Sure. In 2024? You'd be a SQL translator?
No, sure.
A citizen SQL translator.
Ooh, now you're talking. No, I think it's, I mean, I remember the episode we had with June Dershowitz from Amazon, and I would say she would agree that SQL is a necessary skill set for any analyst. So I think you're a good company, Mo. All right. So Mo, you have nothing more to add? No closing thoughts, comments, anything? 2020?
No, I think I've wrapped the year. I'm ready for 2020, year of data culture.
Okay. We're doing it. It's SQL culture time 2020. Let's go. Thank you all for listening. As always, we love to hear from you on the Measure Slack. We've got an exciting year of content kicking off with an amazing time at Super Week. So get there. It's not kicking off with that, but that's when we'll all be together. Get there by any means necessary. And we will see you in Budapest at the end of January if you're there. Okay. If you're not there, you still want to reach out to us. We have a LinkedIn group and we have the Measure Slack and Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you. Okay. I think I speak for my co-hosts and our amazing producer, Josh and Mo and Tim, and maybe even all of our guests. I don't know. I didn't ask, but no matter what 2020 holds in terms of cookie deletion and ITP and GDPR and CCPA and women in analytics and the struggles we have with more racial diversity in our field and all the things that we need to learn to be analysts in our space, whether that be SQL or Python or R or whatever, one thing we can never stop doing is analyzing.
Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Measure Slack group. We welcome your comments and questions. Visit us on the web at analyticshour.io, facebook.com/analyticshour, or at analyticshour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Analytics. Oh my God. What the fuck does that even mean?
It's on our speaker mix, guest mix, Jesus.
Did not have him. Did not have Jesus.
No, we didn't have him.
Yeah, is he in the industry? Sorry. Sorry. Okay.
It's okay.
This is like, okay, Josh needs to, I was thinking the same thing.
We're all thinking it.
I've been messaging him, yeah. But like hard.
Oh, so I've been telling Josh not to talk, so sorry for mixing up the day. Just kidding. Favorite podcast episodes. You get six, Mo. So you get 2.5. Well, we don't share our numbers, and so you can go jump off a cliff. And oh, did you catch that? That's great. Can you please do not put that in the outtakes, because
producer cannot be trusted.
Yeah, and then we'll be like, shut up, Josh, we have something to say. No.
Good stuff. What, no last call on the urine review? No.
The whole thing is a last call.
Ah. Josh had a last call. That's the thing to say. He had like the best last call ever.
Everyone stop. We'll just put my one last call in.
That's right. Rock flag and navel gazing.